Welcome to Shalom Radio UK. Today I interview Ruth Woods-Nissen of Naharia, Israel. Present together with myself and Ruth, there's Betty, her German house guest, and Ralph, a pastor visiting from Germany. I hope you enjoy this program. Ruth relates her story to us. I have had the privilege of knowing Ruth and her late husband Albert for many years, and they have been working faithfully and fearlessly for the Lord in the land of Israel.
I suppose one of my earliest memories, this is a child of maybe five, was probably 1941, London was bombed very heavily, and all the children in London were just away from London. This was really the beginning of my story, my faith. So in some ways the war brought many people to faith, because my mother put me on a train with my name, I suppose my age, I don't remember, I know I had something around my neck.
Which year were you born?
Born in 36. This was 41. I was about five. Maybe it was the end of 41 or the beginning of 42. I don't remember. I was a small child. But my mother put me in a train to take me to safety in the country. And her last words to me was, "Don't tell anyone you're Jewish." Which meant absolutely nothing to me because I didn't know what it meant. Could have meant anything in the world. And so I didn't know what it was, and I didn't tell anybody. And when I arrived at my destination, we were taken in by two women who weren't very nice. They only wanted to get rid of us most of the time. Out of the way. They had to take children. They didn't take it for love of children or because we needed a home. They were forced to take us. You know. They would send us away as much as we could to school. On Sunday, they got rid of us by sending us to church and to Sunday school. But the end result of this was a blessing because I heard about Jesus in Sunday school. And my mother had told me, "Don't tell anyone you're Jewish," but she didn't add the words, "You're not supposed to believe in Jesus. Don't believe in Jesus." So I was quite innocent and I heard about Jesus. It was a war. I had nowhere to go, nobody to talk to. My mother was miles away, I didn't know where, just at the end of the railway line. And I needed my mother. I was with my little sister. I missed her terribly. And Jesus became my friend. I was taught to pray, and I prayed to Jesus from maybe 6 or 7 years old. I didn't know I shouldn't pray to him, so I did. And at the end of the war, I was 9. I think this was 45. We came back to London, and I was sent back to Jewish classes. It wasn't really a Jewish school, but it was. I mean, most of the pupils there were Jewish, but some were, some weren't. And we started to learn Hebrew again, and I remember learning Hebrew and found my scrolls many years later. But in the middle of everything, we had Bibles, what was left, and with Old and New Testaments. And all the kids were going, "Ah, the New Testament of our Lord and Savior is, ah, the New Testament, ah." And I was just about to go, "Ah," because everybody was, and I couldn't. I couldn't say, "Ah," and I couldn't lift my hand up and say, "Ah," nothing. Instead of which, I took myself off to the local Anglican church, where I just loved the songs, the hymns that I heard. I suppose I must have been very musical. I have a very musical family, but we never learnt music, but something about these songs went straight to my heart. We lived in terrible circumstances. I had a violent father. And when I heard these songs, like, "There's a friend for little children above the bright blue sky," I wanted that friend. there's a home for little children. We lived in such terrible places. Everything was bombed. Can you imagine? It wasn't just Germany. London was in pieces. So there was a home. There was a friend. There was a heaven for little children. And that's what I, as a 9-year-old, wanted. I wanted a home, a friend, and heaven, of course. And so I was very fascinated with Jesus, and I waylaid the vicar one day. And I said to the vicar, I must have been 9 at the time, or 8, maybe I wasn't even 9, I don't know. I said to the vicar, I'm Jewish, but I believe in Jesus. And that was really my first confession. I came round to see my mother, and the rest is history. My mother decided we'd be better off as Christians than Jews.
That's amazing.
Yes, because we had such persecution in the East End of London, all over.
My mother was from the East End of London.
Yes.
And experienced a lot of difficulty.
Well, my mother's cousins actually became Quakers because of Hitler and because of Mosey in London. He was a fascist in London. So they became Quakers to hide themselves. I understand what happened. She thought we'd be better off as Christians, so she just got all her children baptised, and that was it. Mm-hmm. But we were still Jews, we were still ill-treated, we were still chased, we were still told we'd crucified their Lord. But I believed. I just believed. No matter what they did, I believed in Jesus. Later on, my mother moved. We got a new apartment as they built apartments. We were moved, and I didn't know where to go to church, and I told one of my teachers in school. And she brought me, she went to look for a church for me, evangelical Anglican church. And that was really the beginning of the real story, because I didn't know it, but the teacher who taught me came to my mother, and she said to my mother, Hannah, don't tell anyone, but I'm also Jewish. Don't tell Ruth, because I don't want the girls to know. But she was the wife of a man who was learning to be a curate, and then a vicar in the Church of England afterwards. So these two, you know, husband prayed for me. And eventually I came through, I came right through to faith and decided that I wanted to follow Jesus. I really joined the Anglican Church and became a member. And later I left the Anglican Church. I became more Free Church, Freie Evangelische Gemeinde. Yeah. By the way, I learned German in school. I went to a very special school in England where they taught us French and German and English. Because the English we spoke was not English at all. It was the English from the East End of London. So we learned English, French and German. Ruth, and if you stayed on, you learned Latin and went on to the university.
Ruth, just give us a few Cockney words.
Yes.
What? Say something in Cockney.
I don't remember any Cockney. I've forgotten everything.
You know, my mother used to say things which I never understood.
Like?
Apples and pears.
Apples and pears, get up the stairs.
Don't tell any pork pies. What's that mean? Why? We don't eat pork anyway, we're Jewish. Don't make lies. Pork pies, lies.
No, I don't remember those things.
Go on.
My mother spoke English quite well, but she also spoke Yiddish. Most of it, which is not in the dictionary, in the Yiddish dictionary, unprintable. But anyway, we learned English, French, and German.
Ruthie, you wanted to say from the age of 16 you wanted to go to Israel.
That is later on. My mother moved again. We went into the country. And it was in the country that I met Gentile people who opened the scriptures to me and showed me that Jesus was the Messiah of the Jewish people. I believed in him. I didn't know why. I believed in him. I always did. Mm-hmm. But then, and I knew I was Jewish, but then she explained to me, they explained to me that Jesus was the Jewish Messiah from the scriptures, and they told me of the existence of the State of Israel, which my family didn't care about. Mm-hmm. So I learnt about the State of Israel, and I began to pray that God would show me what he wanted me to do in my life. I felt that God wanted me to be a missionary. So I gave God a week at one time to tell me where he wanted me to be. I was only 16.
You gave him a week.
A week, yes.
Not so, two, just yeah. 1 week.
1 week. Yeah. And everybody says, you can't do that. But I started to pray.
Good.
So I started to read Romans. I'd never read Romans before. I started to read Romans, and it was came to 11 o'clock on the last evening of the last night of the seventh day. And I said, well, you've got one more hour to tell me.
That's amazing, Ruth, that you should take that approach.
Yeah, this is true. So I said, well, I'll go on reading in Romans, and I opened the Bible, and it said, brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. And I said, oh God, Israel, okay, that's where I'm going. I still cry when I think about it. It was so clear to me that Israel was the place I should go. I told my mum, I thought things over. I thought, well, I can't go alone. I'll need a Jewish husband. You know, I told my mother I was going to marry a Jew. She said, the Jew you want has never been born.
Der muss erst noch gebacken werden.
Yeah.
She didn't know, and I didn't know, but he was 3 years older than me.
Okay.
And he arrived in England 3 years after I was 16. I was 19. No, I was
19.
He was 16 when he arrived in England. I was 13 when the year I got converted.
Oh.
He arrived in England, and he got converted later. But anyway, I found my Jew. I went to Bible school, I became a nurse and a midwife, and everything with an eye to getting to Israel.
Yes.
It wasn't so easy because, and then I met Albert, I met him, I thought he was his brother, but which was good because I was trying to find his wife, my husband's brother's wife. I'd met at an underground station. We had everything in common except she was going to marry somebody called Nissim. That's all I can remember. And then I heard this Jew called Nissim was going to speak at a meeting, and I thought, that's my friend's husband. I'm going to find her. I'd lost her. So I bounced up to him in the meeting, and I said, are you Judith's husband? And he said, no, I'm his brother. So I didn't know you. I was looking at my future husband. But so I found my Jew. My mother was very surprised. He was a wonderful believer. And he also trained in Bible school. And he came to join our mission, and we got married on condition that he would bring me to the land of Israel. That was one of the conditions I laid out for him. So,
yeah. You should shortly mention where he was born and where
he
was born.
I was thinking that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Tell us a little of Albert.
Yeah.
Albert himself was born in Kobe in Japan. He was born of an Iraqi father, Iraqi Jewish father, and an Egyptian Jewish mother. And he was born in Japan because his father was on business. And at the age of 5, a Japanese officer said to them, Mr. Nissim, we are going to war with America. We think you had better leave the country quickly before the war breaks out while you have chance. You should get a boat and leave the country. So Mr. Nissim Sr. packed up, took his children, and they went to Egypt, where they were bombed by Mussolini. Mussolini bombed them out of Egypt. So they took off for India for 6 years, and then from India, after the war, they came to Switzerland for a couple of years and learned French. So he was hearing Arabic, English, French, like most of the Jews. And then he came to England, and he became a good Englishman. After a while, the Iraqis tore up his passport and threw him out of the embassy, said he was no longer an Iraqi. So he applied to England, and he got a British passport. Anyway, that's the story of my husband. And he went to see his brother one day, or his brother went to see him. They were both studying. And Albert had made himself two fried eggs on a plate. His brother said, "I've got something to tell you." So Albert said, "What do you want to tell me?" He said, "I found the Messiah." Well, poor Albert, he was so upset. It wasn't joyful news for him. Mm-hmm. He decided that he would try to win his brother back for Judaism. And he set out. So in order to do that, he had to read the whole of the Old Testament through. And then he had to read the New Testament through. And of course, by the time he got halfway through the New Testament, he was sobbing. He used to just put his head under the pillow at night and just cry and practice the name of Jesus, because it was very difficult for him. But he realized that Jesus was the Messiah. So 9 months after his brother told him that he had found the Messiah, my husband-to-be also found the Messiah and went off to Bible school and decided he too wanted to become a missionary for the Jewish people.
The commandments is a lamp. Keep burning with the oil of the Spirit. It is like the lamp in the sanctuary and the pillars of fire to Israel. It must be not only a light to our eyes to gratify them, but a light to our feet and to our path, to direct us in the choice of our ways in general and in the particular steps we take in that way. The Word of God discovers to us concerning God and ourselves that which otherwise we could not have known. Even David labored under many discouragements. He prays for God's grace. Quicken me, O Lord. Make me lively. Make me cheerful. Quicken me by the afflictions to greater diligence in my work. For David honestly prays for the acceptance of the free will offering, not of his purse, but of his mouth, his prayers and prayer. There's but a step between us and death. For the wicked have made a snare for us. We need to find rooms in our heads and hearts for the Word of God, and has that in our minds as fresh as ever. And where that dwells richly, it will be a well of living water. The truths, the promises of thy word have I taken as a heritage forever. For they are the rejoicing of my heart. So those that would have the blessings of God testimony must come underneath the bond of his statutes. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path.
So eventually we got married, and our mission sent us to Italy to work amongst the Jews there. When we worked in Rome for 4 years, we had three children there, and my husband did most of the work. I brought up the children, of course. They were very small at the time. I was busy learning Italian and entertaining and doing everything a good wife should. And he did the main work amongst the Jewish people. He did all the work at that time. But then, you know, this call to Israel was never forgotten. For us, Rome was halfway between London and Israel. It was just halfway there. I began, and I was reading in the Tanakh, in the Old Testament, and I would read things like, I will bring them from the east and the west, and I will say to the north, give up, and the south, keep not back. And I would cry. I said, I'm from the west. Why aren't you bringing me back? Why not? Why? I want to go back. and I will take them, one of a family and two of a city, and bring them to the land of Israel. Lord, take me. You know, the redeemed of the Lord shall come to Zion, in Isaiah. And I thought, well, I'm redeemed. Why aren't you in Zion? You know, I was having this fight with the Lord every single day. And long before that, while I was in college, we went to the airport for a day off, missionary training college, and we saw the planes taking off. And suddenly they said, and now an El Al Israeli jet is taking off for Israel. I can't talk about it. The plane took off, everyone's interested, and I'm sobbing, watching. How dare that plane take off and left me standing there watching it, taking off for Tel Aviv. That's how much I wanted to go to Israel. I can't talk about it today without crying. It's still as though I'm still on that place, looking at the plane going to Israel and leaving me in London. So that desire that was in me just got deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I was sort of reading the scriptures and fighting with God all the time. Why am I here and not in Israel? And one day, I was learning Italian, of course. I was going to Italian lessons, and I passed through the market. One moment I'm reading my Italian verbs, you know, and I'm quite happy. And the next moment I looked up, and my eye caught Jaffa grapefruits. That was the end. That was worse than the airport. I was sobbing in that tram. And I got home, and I said to Albert, I can't do this anymore. We have to go to Israel. I can't take it anymore. So we knelt on the floor and we said to God, Albert said to God, will you give us I'm putting a fleece before you. Will you give us a sign? And then my husband went off for his Italian lesson. He left me, he shut the door. And the postman came and there was a letter from someone, a well-known person called Dr. Derek Prince.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Do you know who Derek Prince is?
Yes.
Anyway, he said, I'm sending you this $100 towards your trip to Israel. Came 5 minutes after Albert got off his knees and went through the door. So I phoned Albert and we took that as God's answer. $100 in those times was a lot of money. It's not $100 today. Mm-hmm. And that was towards our trip to Israel, so... We wrote to our mission, who did not want us to go to Israel. They wanted us in Rome. But we knew that we had to go. So we asked them for 9 months' leave, and they refused. We went home. And finally, they wanted us to go back to Italy. They even offered to double our pay if we go back to Israel, to give us twice as much salary if we went back to Rome. But we chose to come to Israel with nothing. With £300 in our pocket, we came to Israel. 17 suitcases and three children. We had no visa. We didn't know whether they knew us or not, whether they heard about us, whether they would keep us or anything. But that was February the 23rd, 1971. And we've been here ever since, apart from a trip abroad, you know, to talk to people or see our families or something like this. We've lived in this country
since
1971, February, and never regretted living here because we just know that God brought us here. It's like my soul was born here and it came back to its place. You know what I mean? I've never regretted. We've sat here being bombed like silly from Lebanon, but we've never regretted being in the land of Israel. Well, after 18 months, we came to Nahariya, and slowly we began to meet believers in miraculous ways. We didn't know anybody, but somehow we met them in the street, or I was sitting in the back of a hospital van and somebody did this to me. I'm a nurse by profession. I said, yes. She said, you see that sister over there? Yes. What about her? She's a mashumid. A mashumid means a destroyed one, one who believes in Jesus.
An apostate.
Okay. An apostate. So I said, really? She said, yes, she's a mashumid. I said to her, thank you for telling me. And she'll never know how grateful I was. I mean, that was just one occasion where we met believers without even looking them. You know, somebody in a van just said to us, that woman's in a shumid. So another day, an ambulance driver came in. He brought me, I was a midwife by this time, and he brought me a patient, and I stamped, we was in a hurry, stamped it and signed it, and realised I'd done it upside down. So I said, oh, I'm sorry, I've signed this upside down. So he looked and he said, Nesim, I used to know someone called Eli Nesim at home. That's my brother-in-law, mm-hmm. the one who married my friend. Mm-hmm. So I said, yes, he's my brother-in-law. We were very afraid in those days. We didn't know mm-hmm. anybody. I said, but he's one of those, you know. He said, yes, nurse, I know. Good night, nurse. And off he went. And a few days later, he was back in my house. He'd gone to find out, and he was also a believer. So we met each other under incredible circumstances, like a miracle. Just, I signed my name upside down and told him. And he saw the name, and he knows Nesim is very rare, and he knows that Nesim is a believer, so maybe I had some connection. I was from England, so... This is how we found one another. And every time you found someone, you found... They knew another six or another three or somewhere. So gradually, without phones, without telephones, without computers, we didn't have phones for years. But somehow we built up a network. And we began to pray. Somebody told me there was a Russian woman living opposite me on the same floor, but opposite me in another block. So I speak no Russian. She spoke no English. I thought, what are we going to do here? So I rang the doorbell, and she opened the door this much. She was very frightened. And she looked at me, and she said something, and I said, Annie? And she just opened the door, pulled me in, embraced me. You never do this to a Jewish person, but how could I tell her? You know, I gave her first Bible in Russian. She'd never had a Bible. She came to faith with a hymn book. But I got her a Bible. And she was one of the first people to come to our meetings. We would we met round our bed. That was the only place we had. Round our bed. And we prayed. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to the sitting room. We moved to the sitting room. We met one or two other people. And I don't know how it started, but maybe we were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, slowly. And slowly we met other believers in town. It was really strange because one spoke Russian, but she spoke a few words of Yiddish. So I was able to speak in pidgin Yiddish. If you know, it's like middle high German. So middle we communicated, and we met Germans who wanted to meet the Russians. And he would speak in German, and I'd translate into pidgin Yiddish. And she'd say something in Yiddish. I could understand it, but he couldn't. So I would translate back into German. And that's how we started, with several languages. And we finally decided we would have meetings. We would try to have meetings in Hebrew, because one spoke Hungarian, one spoke English, one spoke this, that, the other. Very difficult, because we don't speak the same language. So we started to... We started meetings.
What was in common was
Pardon?
The one language of love and the one Lord, the one Spirit mm-hmm. that yep, combines, yeah. although there are different kinds of yeah. culture, language and so on.
Yes, well, we all had to learn Hebrew because that's yeah. the only way.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Israel and everybody speaks Hebrew. So we started to pray. It was very difficult. The words got stuck in our throats, but we pressed on until we could all speak Hebrew. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody said to us in the middle of a prayer, in a very American accent, "Ech omrim be'evrit atonement." How do you say in Hebrew atonement?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everybody, without even looking up, said kapara.
And then he continued praying.
Even in the middle of prayer, you'd ask yeah. for help, you know, language help. But yeah, eventually we turned into a Hebrew meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we found yeah. people who spoke Hebrew, and slowly, slowly.
But also you should also tell how difficult it was here in the town with the rabbis that they had, and you had at that time you had 5 children.
Yes.
You had to work. Your husband had to work, and you brought up your 5 children. And you had the congregation, not in this wonderful house, but before.
Yeah, we lived in a small flat.
Yeah.
The neighbours were not against us. This was one thing. Mm-hmm. The neighbours were very interested and would ask us many questions. Mm-hmm. But somehow the rabbi got to know that I'd given out Bibles. Mm-hmm. And
he was not amused.
Hmm? he was not pleased. Because to give a Bible is to give the truth. Yeah. You know, because they get the word of God and they can read themselves.
You know, the Queen of England, if she's annoyed, she says, "We are not amused."
Yes, that's why
he's not exactly.
With
your das verbindet man mit der Queen of England.
Yeah, exactly.
The rabbi was not pleased.
The Queen of Naharia must continue, please.
Okay. I went along and he interviewed several people, and I came in. He said, "What do you want?" In Hebrew, of course. And I said, "You sent for me. My name is Ruth Nesim." He said, "Oh, sit down." And he said, "I hear that you are a Christian," something like this. I said, "I'm a Jewess who believes in Yeshua, the Messiah." You know, he was very upset. And everything he said, I sort of had an answer for. And he said, "Where did you get your apartment from?" I said, "From the Sochnut." "Or does this mean we're going to get punished because we believe in Jesus? You want to take our flat from us?" Or, you know, I don't know. I had such courage at the time. I wasn't really courageous, but somehow I had the courage to oppose him. Mm-hmm. And later on, I found my name on, my son rushed in with a notice, and it was something like this: "Dear neighbours, there is a group of terrorists in your neighbourhood, terrorists of souls waiting to destroy you. For your information, the nurse, Ruth Nesim, telephone number, address, you know, is in your midst. Throw out the crusaders of the cross," you know, and things like this.
Goodness.
This was plastered.
What malicious.
Yes, pardon?
What malicious persecution.
Oh, it was terrible. When we got this notice, I said to Sammy, my son, he was only 6, I said, "It does say that when they shall say all manner of evil against you, leap for joy." I said, "Come on, Sammy, let's leap." And we began to leap into the air. And then a phone call came, and it was a neighbour from opposite, from the next block. And our 2 blocks were having an argument about something. His block against our block, and he was the head of the committee there, and I was the head of the committee on our block. And I thought, oh dear, now I've had it because of this thing. And he said, "Ruth, did you see those notices? I said, "I did." He said, "Well, I want you to know something. I've spoken to everybody here, and everybody loves you. You are our neighbour, our friend, our family." Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. He said, "Any problems you have, we are with you. Don't worry, your neighbours are with you." Mm-hmm. And we were greatly encouraged, you know, even though the 2 blocks were fighting. Mm-hmm. He and I are still really in contact today. We're still friends, really. Yeah. And we've moved away many years ago. Yeah, the neighbours in this area, I believe in something different, so they don't...
They told her, you know why? And so they told her, because you are believing in something different.
In something different,
are they religious?
Orthodox? Not at all. They don't believe in anything.
That's
their lives are awful. Yeah. I won't even go into some of the things they do, but it doesn't matter.
There's an expression that has been coined that says, you can believe in anything excepting in Jesus.
Exactly.
Mm. Or you can believe in nothing.
If I had a house full of men every night, that would be all right, as long as Jesus isn't here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's exactly how it is. I mean, truth, the basic thing. I can do anything I like, but I mustn't believe in Jesus.
But you know. They told you also, we know that you are the best.
You are the best neighbor here.
Yeah.
But they don't like you because you believe in Jesus, one of them told me. So... What to do? I mean, my last block, they were nearly all my friends. It was lovely, you know, and they used to listen to the meetings, and we lived together as a family.
Mm-hmm. I came to this congregation 10 years ago. Here, we met here in the house. The lines were filled up here and here and here. Here was the speaker, and we were nearly 30, 40 people afterwards, even sitting on the chairs, and then we had to on the steps, and then we had to look special room. And so the congregation really grew and was wonderful.
We experienced similar things on our visits. We would come and sit, visit Ruth and Albert, mm-hmm. and we would be invited to fellowship meetings, mm-hmm. and the room would be full of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there were people who came, there were people who came to faith, there was a rabbi who came to faith, mm-hmm. also in this town, and his wife. Mm-hmm. They're both gone now, but mm-hmm. we had a lot of people. And another thing I should say, when I came to the country, there were about 300 Holocaust survivors, believers. And maybe there were a few young families, but not more than 300 believers in the country. Today, there are anything between 15,000, 20,000, even more. Yeah. Because we don't know, a lot of people don't, they don't know, you know, exactly how many people, a lot of people don't register themselves, but we are thousands. There may have been half a dozen assemblies, half a dozen meeting places in the whole country. Maybe, let's exaggerate and say there were 10. No. Now we have at least 160 all over the country. House meetings, meetings of 400 people in a place, congregations. Every town, almost every kibbutz has either a congregation or a group of people meeting. So wonderful things have happened all over the country, because the same year that we came, others came in, and we did not know each other, but eventually we all linked up. That's the amazing thing. We didn't know the other one was there. We thought we were the only ones.
But you started, I heard that you started that when the country was founded in 1948, there were exactly 12 people.
After the British left,
yes, believing people.
But you know what was tragic in that period? There were more believers, and the missions working among the Jews told them to leave. And many of them left the country before the birth because they said you will be persecuted. Mm-hmm. Some went back to Britain, some went to Australia, mm-hmm. some went to South Africa. Mm-hmm. I think those missions completely misread the situation and did those Jewish believers a great disservice, and the body in the land. They actually even helped to sponsor them to leave. I think that's an insanity. But you know, hindsight is always a good thing. You can look back and say, I think they made a big mistake, those organizations. They did it out of the best intention to protect the people. But sometimes I think our best intentions get it very wrong.
But the thing that turns out is, in the midst of all of this, with our names on lists, on blacklists, and losing our jobs, I lost my job at least once, people who came to us and became our friends were real friends, because they stuck by us even though they knew that people would associate them with us. I had one friend who was a neighbour. She's not in the country now, but she stuck by me through thick and thin and listened to the gospel day and night. Mm-hmm. She was also a Holocaust survivor. But we found real friends. And even today in town, we have different people in the town that really love us and know who we are. I think we've got more real friends because of this than the chief rabbi, because they haven't got an interest in us. You know, they're not expecting anything from us. We're not giving them jobs, you know. But they're real friends, even though they're not believers. And it's the situation has changed. And I think it's a very hopeful situation, because it's written that I will pour out my spirit on the house of Israel, and I will take away the stony heart out of their flesh, and I will give them a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within them. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And we believe that this is going to happen. We see signs of it. Well, obviously, from whereas the church in Europe has gone backwards, The believing population of Israel has multiplied many times. It's not only that we've the Jewish believing population has increased, but over the years the Arab Christians and the Jewish Christians have come together, so that we work very closely with a number of Arab pastors. And we're like brothers and sisters. We love each other absolutely like one soul. I mean, he knows this. He's been to some, met some of them.
And I've interviewed some of them
and
recorded their programs.
We just love them and they love us. Mm-hmm. And that has been marvellous to see the growth of the work between Arabs and Jews. We have one Arab who's set up a Christian soldier station, a home for Christian soldiers, and is actively enlisting Arab soldiers into the Israeli army. And we interviewed him yesterday.
In fact, he told us yesterday that he has recruited up to 80 young Arab men to join the Israeli Defense Force. And they get thrown in with all the other young people, and they have to learn to fit in together. It's not that they were living separately, but, you know, you have your Arab communities and your Jewish communities, and obviously if you are a Christian, you're going to be worshipping in a Christian church, and some of the Jews in the army will be secular, and some have no faith, and others are maybe quite religious. And he said that it's, and some of the young Arab recruits find it hard, and they actually struggle emotionally, and some of them find it very difficult. But he said others thrive, and there is no bars hold. If they make a good adjustment, they can go right to the top.
In the woods at night, we need a light, so we don't trip over trees, roots, or fall into holes. In this life, we walk through a dark forest of evil. But the Bible can be our light to show us the way ahead, so we won't stumble as we walk. It reveals the entangling root of false values and philosophies. By studying the Bible, you will be able to see your way clear enough to stay on the right path. It is the light. The Word is the light.
Wonderful thing is when Adonai, God took the husband from Ruthi to heaven, he gave her a new task. He gave her the task to love the Arab Christian Arab people, and she learned to know several of them, and they have a real friendship. So that even I thought I was coming to help the Jews here in Israel, but I learned also through Rosi that it's important to get in contact also with Christian Arabs who love Israel and who pray for Israel, who even pray for Israel and who pray for the army, for the government, and who confess that they are Israelis. mm-hmm. and not Palestinians. Mm-hmm. So it's really a great thing.
And but great we also love. Work with Muslims,
yeah.
and we yeah. have many Muslims. We have Muslims yeah. too that we really yeah. love and that love us.
Yeah.
I met two when my husband was dying. He died next to a Palestinian terror cell head who'd been shot by the Fatah. Mm-hmm. Died right next to him, and his brother was looking after him. Two members of the Hamas, one of whom had been shot. The mm-hmm. one in the bed was the head of the terror cell, and his brother was a member of the terror cell. And we became very good friends after that. They're
they
no longer not, Hamas, of course.
They
they're no longer
anymore.
Hamas, but and they're still That's Muslims. But their hatred of Israel turned to love. I visited them many times, even in their hometown. I've visited them also in Israel, and when they've been able to come to Israel. But we have friendship with local Muslims, and just it's wonderful what God is doing. He's working with Muslims today and using both Arabs and Jews for it. Because yeah. the Muslims really have never known love. They don't know what love is.
Yeah.
Their religion is a religion of hate. Yeah. So, you know, if somebody comes with them, towards them with love, they're just stuck, you know.
Yeah.
I met these two Hamas members, and I refused to be their enemy. And after 2 weeks, I became Mama Ruti.
Mm.
I was their mother. They said she was an enemy Jewish woman, and she helped us.
Mm.
She's now our mother. And we have many
Jewish
that come
mother.
Here, and
yeah.
we just love them. And they feel it. They feel
and
it.
They have changed. If you see the pictures from these both, they have changed such a lot. Now they have really peaceful faces,
mm-hmm.
not like before,
mm-hmm.
and it's just great.
Mm-hmm.
And once we celebrated, even in Haifa, we celebrated with our congregation and with the Arab Christian congregation, we celebrated Erev Seder,
mm-hmm.
the Jewish festival, and we celebrated it together. And the pastor, the Arabic Protestant, Arabic Christian pastor said, the men must wear kippot.
Yeah.
And they did it. And and he said to my late husband and me, it's not easy for them to wear it on their head, but they did it. And we never felt like in this evening that we are one church. We are
united in the Messiah. One
we
people.
Really thought we were already in heaven. It was so great.
Ephesians chapter 2,
yeah.
that he has broken down the dividing
yeah.
wall of hostility
yeah.
and he has made us into one new person
yeah.
in his body on the cross. It's the contradiction and the love and the mystery of God which overwhelms one.
The congregation today in Nahariya, the congregation we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
How many people,
different Messianic
well,
Jews
are? Some of them are Jews, some of them are Gentiles, one is an Arab, some are Lebanese.
Oh.
We have two branches. We have the general branch, and then we have Lebanese, a group of Lebanese that... One was here this morning. We meet together. We go to each other's homes. We're very good friends. We're basically one congregation. But they meet separately because they speak Arabic and we speak Hebrew and English and German, whatever else there is.
These were the people when Israel pulled out of South Lebanon. Their lives were under terrible threat because they were with the South Lebanese army. If Israel did not assist them, they would have been massacred.
Mm-hmm.
And so they literally had to come standing in the clothes that they wore. And in one of the previous programs, I interviewed this brother Pierre and his wife Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
They literally, and their, how many kids did they have then, Ruth? Was
they
it
had
three?
Three at the time. Two were born here.
He said that there were 8 steps to get into Israel across the border, but it took 8 hours because there was such a mass of humanity from the north having to be processed, and as they came through, so they could come through and they could register their names, and they were taken on buses and they took them to various hotels.
Mm-hmm.
He called himself a red carpet refugee. He says the red carpet was rolled out, and they literally had the clothes they were wearing, mm-hmm. nothing else. And the next day, they gave them coupons to go to buy clothes and to get things so that they could begin to adjust to normal life.
And they learn people on the Ulpan, and they get jobs here, and
they speak Hebrew better than we do.
And the one daughter of this pastor, he is a part-time pastor, she is now, she succeeded in her law exams at a very high level, mm-hmm. and she is studying, I think, American, is it American?
She's studying American law now.
American law. And, I mean, and they're such a beautiful family. I was there on, what night was it that we went to them last week?
I don't remember. You went, I didn't.
Oh, you see, I went with Ephraim. They were just their family, and there was another gentleman, and then Ephraim and myself. Ephraim is the pastor of the Messianic Kehela. And we had a lovely evening. It was really beautiful. And also worship is sometimes aided with audio cassettes and videos because they don't always have access to a keyboard or something like that. So that often you'll sing with a backing track. And the worship was in Arabic, and it was really beautiful.
Mm. Pastor Ralph said a prayer in German.
Because, as I said, we have an international listenership, and this will make the program even more appealing. And I have listeners in Germany.
Okay, I will pray. Du unser lieber Vater im Himmel, du Vater unseres Herrn Jesus Christus, du Hüter Israels, wir danken dir für diese Begegnung heute Nachmittag und dafür, diese so bewegende Geschichte von Ruth zu hören. Hier ist ein Mensch, ein Paar deiner Berufung gefolgt, leidenschaftlich aus Liebe zu deinem Wort, aus Liebe zu dir. Und Ruth und ihr Mann und andere mit ihr haben in all den Jahren Segensspuren hinterlassen. Dieser Stadt, in dieser Gemeinde, im Leben vieler Einzelner. Dafür danken wir dir. Und auch das, was sie gegenwärtig tut, spricht eine so deutliche Sprache und ist ein Beweis dafür, dass die Liebe den Hass überwindet und Fremdes miteinander verbindet. Wir danken dir für diese besonderen Momente an diesem Nachmittag, die Gemeinschaft, für das Miteinander, für das Leben, für das Lebenswerk von Ruth und ihres Mannes, für das, was sie hier mit uns geteilt hat. Und es ist eine Ermutigung und eine Herausforderung zugleich für uns, dir in allem zu vertrauen, nachzufolgen, deinem Ruf zu folgen. Herr Jesus Christus, du bist der, der verbindet, du bist der Überwinder, du bist der Lebendige. Und dafür ist das, was wir heute Nachmittag gehört haben, ein ganz lebendiges Beispiel. Danke für das Lebenszeugnis von Ruth. Danke für unser Miteinander und für das Geschenk deiner Gegenwart.
Betty kindly gave us a paraphrase of Ralph's prayer in English.
Thank you so much, Lord, that Ralph spoke about Ruthie sharing her life story with us. And it's so great that he encourages her and helps and teaches us the words of the Lord. And I think it's wonderful that we are here together from different countries, but in one spirit, and this is only the work of Yeshua, of Jesus. So we are so thankful for this afternoon, and our hearts are filled with the mercy of the Lord. Amen.
Friends, you have been listening to a unique interview with Ruth Nissim. This is Shalom Radio UK. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Shalom!
יברכך אדוני וישמרך. יאר אדוני פניו אליך ויחונקה. יישא אדוני פניו אליך וישם לך שלום.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.